Thought the earth was heating up like a foreman grill. I thought the coals were melting like a fondue pot. I was a greenie. I hated SUVs. I used to cringe when cows would cut the cheese. Then I checked the facts.
Welcome back to the Green Front, where we bring you all the environmental facts as we know them and understand them, and the biggest stories that I can find that are not being covered by mainstream media. And this next story certainly falls into that category. I haven't seen it anywhere on the network news or newspapers, maybe a few online news sites. But did you know that oil companies can write off the costs of their cleanups from oil spills? That is something that needs to change as taxpayers get the bill for $10 billion. That's just from the BP cleanup expenses. So there is some legislation underway now to try to reverse that, well, that situation that is totally unfair. In fact, it's called the Oil Spill Tax Fairness Act. To tell us more about that is Jackie Savitz. She is with Oceana. And thanks for joining me.
Hi, Betsy. How are you?
Good. Glad to hear about this. This is legislation introduced by Alcee Hastings, representative from Florida. Tell us what it would do and what was the motivation for him to take up this issue and go up against the oil giants. It's never easy when you're fighting the fossil fuel industry.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of us want to go up against the oil giants right now because, you know, they're turning record profits and they're still getting a lot of assistance from the Treasury in terms of subsidies. But it turns out, as you mentioned, that beyond the subsidies that we give them, which is on the order of about $4 billion a year, they're also able to write off the cost of cleanup. So if you think about the oil spill that happened in 2010, BP oil spill, they had this horrible oil spill. It was terribly damaging to our coast, to marine wildlife, and they really weren't able to respond to it. Then they turned around and wrote off the cost of cleanup, which ended up costing about $10 billion. And that's money that our federal treasury had to forego at a time when they were having a pretty hard time making sure they were balancing their budget.
Right. So, you know, inherently logical that they not be allowed to do that. And then, you know, you look at Exxon, I think, being the most profitable company ever, this kind of thing continues. How optimistic are you that this will be successful?
Well, right now, it's relatively new. It's been introduced by Alcee Hastings, as you said, on the House side. And in the Senate, it was also introduced by Senator Nelson of Florida. Neither bill has been co-sponsored by any representatives from Massachusetts yet, including Senator John Kerry, who sits on the Finance Committee, which is the committee of record that it'll actually have to go through. That's the committee that has jurisdiction. So we're going to need to see a lot more support for it if we expect it to move, but I think it's kind of a no-brainer. It's really hard to imagine why somebody would be against making this correction.
And there's also legislation underway that would mandate offshore drilling everywhere?
Yeah. You know, it's like we learn nothing.
Everywhere?
Pretty much. We learn nothing from the terrible accident of 2010. You'd think we would have taken a break, but instead what we're seeing is a big push by, I like to call it the oil caucus, representatives and senators that seem to be representing the oil industry rather than the citizens, are trying to open up the Atlantic coast, the Pacific coast, parts of the Gulf that have been closed, and, of course, the Arctic to offshore drilling. Now, this is in spite of the fact that the president is already opening about 75% of the areas that have any oil to drilling. The oil industry is sitting on leases that they've had for years that they haven't done anything with. There are thousands of leases in the Gulf of Mexico now, and they still want more. They're really not satisfied, and some of these members of Congress seem to think that that's a top priority for our country.
And when you hear these politicians, usually of the Republican bent, saying, you know, we need to reduce our dependency on foreign oil, drill, baby, drill, how much of a cringe do you make?
You know, there's so many reasons to cringe about that. The main reason, of course, as you were talking about a little bit in the previous segment, is that we are facing a climate change problem. We know that what we need to be doing is transitioning away from the use of fossil fuels and towards the use of clean energy. to save our oceans, but also to save ourselves and preserve life as we know it on this planet. And so in order to make that shift, what we need to be doing is saying, all right, you know, we know this is an industry, the fossil fuel industry is doing quite well, probably doesn't need our help right now. Let's try to focus our help and our investment in an industry that's going to be the solution to the problem that the fossil fuel industry is creating. So that's the number one reason to cringe, I think, when I think about the fact that they want to open these areas. Other reasons to cringe include the fact that we haven't improved our safety procedures one bit since the spill. They have come out with some new safety rules, but essentially all they do is make law out of things that the industry was already doing that weren't working. We haven't improved our ability to respond to a spill. We all saw what happened last time, where the industry was unable to cap that well for something like 80 days, that it gushed and gushed, and there was nothing we could do about it. And we were all wringing our hands saying, well, at the very least, we can make sure this never happens again. But as soon as it was capped, it was pretty much back to business as usual. So I do think there's a lot of reasons to cringe.
Especially because Americans seem to have such such a short-term memory problem. long-term, just short-term. It's like it's off the front pages. Not that people forget, but it just is not, you know, top of mind, and it's not in the news, so it's not really a prime concern. And then we're subjected to these false arguments about, you know, to justify drilling and use of other fossil fuels, you know, in the name of, you know, independence.
Well, one of the things we've looked at is whether or not we actually need to be drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. It turns out the Gulf of Mexico gives us about 8% of the oil that we actually use. Now, we wanted to figure out if there was a way to sort of scale back on that drilling and ultimately end it without increasing our imports of foreign oil. And it turns out that by about 2020 or 2025 at the latest, we could actually start making some changes in the way we use energy in this country that are not, you know, draconian in any way, that would allow us to alleviate the need for that drilling, that would actually mean that we don't have to start selling new leases. We don't have to do new drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, because we're going to start to bring in clean energy and make some common sense changes in the way we use energy so that we don't need that 8% and we don't have to import anymore.
Hmm. And so Representative Hastings really does deserve, as it says on your blog, an ocean of ovations for introducing this bill, because, again, going up against the fossil fuel industry is never easy and it's never quick. And yet these environmental problems that would likely stem from drilling, and there are many, as you outlined, there's a sense of urgency there, or there should be anyway. And so what is Oceana doing to try to help this legislation along?
Well, what we're trying to do is to try to build more support for it in Congress. It's sometimes surprising when you see a bill like this that is such common sense, and that we're so grateful to Congressman Hastings and Senator Nelson for taking the lead. But where is the rest of the Congress on this? You know, where are our members of Congress that we've elected? Why have they not stepped up to the plate? And so what we're doing is we're trying to talk to different offices and try to generate co-sponsors. And I would encourage listeners who agree that this bill is a good thing to do could get in that game as well. Because really what we need is more support in Congress, so it's not just one congressman who's trying to do the right thing on his own.
Are you confident that President Obama will follow through on his State of the Union address comment about we need to end, or maybe it was reduce, subsidies going to oil companies?
You know,
or was that just
the president,
political rhetoric?
I was really glad to hear him say that, and I think he really does believe that and want to see that happen. He had that in his last year budget, and his budget for this year just came out, and he does have a reduction in subsidies to the oil industry in that budget. But he can't do it alone. He needs the Congress to step up to the plate and do that for him. That's the balance of power. That's the way it works. And so, I mean, I think if you're the president, of course you want to do that. Why do you want to keep giving away money to a rich industry when there's so many other industries out there that need help, and there's so many other programs in this country that, you know, that are suffering? So I think it's the president's intention to do that, but I think it's not going to happen unless we get our members of Congress to step up to the plate and support it.
Sort of like the Republicans who are saying, you know, we need to give the rich a tax break while we ignore the poor and middle class.
Yeah, it's a very similar dynamic. The oil industry, the proposals have been to cut about $2 billion to $4 billion in subsidies per year from the oil industry. But if you look at the total amount of money they receive, you know, we could go as high as $10 billion in terms of how much we could save. And that, those are funds that could go to a variety of different things, whether it's transportation or supporting Social Security, Medicare, all the things that all of our grandparents and parents are relying on, instead of giving money to big, rich oil companies. And, you know, it's interesting because this transportation bill that you alluded to, that's also very hot in Congress today, is basically trying to claim that we need to drill more so that we can get more money for transportation, like to upgrade roads and bridges and things like that. And, of course, we do need to make those improvements, but we don't need to drill more to do it because all the drilling they're talking about gets us a very small amount of money, probably less than $2 billion. But we could easily cut $4 billion just in subsidies to the oil industry. So the interest isn't really to raise money. The interest is basically just to help the oil industry out any way they can.
And what would happen if we just took the tax breaks that the fossil fuel industry providers get and enjoy and profit from and just move that over to the clean energy sector? That would begin to level the playing field and begin to take what is still a small percentage of our overall energy output and start giving it a chance.
Exactly. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And, you know, it's interesting because we're very concerned about things like ocean acidification, which is a process where the oceans are becoming more acidic because of the carbon dioxide that we're releasing from burning fossil fuels. And the only way to stop that from happening, and that's going to mean extinctions for corals and other marine life, the only way to stop it from happening is to make the shift away from fossil fuels and toward clean energy. And we need to help that shift along. And the way to do that is not to keep giving every spare dollar we have to the oil industry.
Yeah, just found the figure. ExxonMobil last year had a $41 billion profit, and they're getting tax breaks. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. There's
almost no words, you know? Outrageous.
I know. BP declared $25 billion in profit in 2011, the year after it completely destroyed the Gulf of Mexico. And they're still making $25 billion in profit. These are not companies that need our help. You know, no matter what your politics are, you can look around you and you can see companies, you can see people that need help right now. This is not our best moment, you know. And so why are we trying to figure out every possible way to help the richest companies? Doesn't make any sense.
I couldn't agree more. So hopefully, not that we have a lot of Republicans in our audience, but hopefully we can talk sense into anybody who might hear this broadcast. We just have a couple minutes left. What else is Oceana working on right now?
Well, we are working on clean energy. One of the things we're looking at is how to stimulate the development of ocean-based energy so that the oceans can be part of the solution to this problem. And one thing we've identified is offshore wind. It's a source of energy that's about ready to start being built at commercial scale. We don't have it yet, but if we start investing in offshore wind, we think we can actually generate a lot of useful electricity, and if we're careful in how we do it, we can do it in a way that doesn't impact marine life.
And what about those on the shore, including some who would call themselves environmentalists, who are opposing wind turbines out in the water?
Yeah, no, I think it's noble to think about marine life and try to make sure that whatever we're doing doesn't harm them. It's certainly something I've done for most of my life. But I think that when you look at the impact that climate change is having on marine animals with acidification, sea level rise, all of those problems, you see that we need a solution to the carbon dioxide problem. And if offshore wind can be a part of that, it ultimately could be a net benefit for marine life, especially if we do it in a way that it's not built in places that are, for example, bird migration zones or whale migration areas or coral reefs or oyster reefs, but we build it in parts of the ocean where we don't have sensitive marine ecosystems. We can find a way to do it that will actually benefit marine life.
And then there's those who just don't like it because it hinders their view.
Yeah, and I think it's beautiful. I mean, when you think about what it's accomplishing, I think it's beautiful. I've seen offshore wind farms in Europe. I don't think they're ugly. But, you know, I think it is really just a matter of what we're accustomed to. People are very accustomed to, for example, seeing a jetty or a bridge or a boardwalk on their beach. And this is really just the, you know, 21st century version of that.
The 21st century realities. Jackie, thank you so much. I really appreciate your comments and your time spent with the Green Front. And we just have a minute left. I'd like to take that time to thank the friend of Green Front Radio, and that is D.R. Tucker. He is my favorite climate convert. He wrote a really nice article about my green media quest on the Huffington Post. It came out on Monday of this week, so check that out. We'll put a link up on the greenfront.com site. Hope you have a great week. See you next time.